Mitzvah Shin Tzadi Hei, 395 mitzvahs, my Sarishon, is the mitzvah of the first tithe. What's the first tithe? Shnischayavnu b'nei Yisrael, l'seis chelek echad me'asara chalokim mizera haretz alevim. That we have to give, our levim aren't even here to receive, to hear all about the bounty that they get, okay? But we have to give 1/10 of our produce to the levim. Shneamar, ki es ma'asar b'nei Yisrael asher yarimu l'ashem teruma nasati l'alevim. Not talking about the truma. The truma is given to the Kohanim, but rather truma just means in general, in a non-technical sense. Truma just means a portion that you give to someone, that you take out and give away. So here, it's also, the ma'aser is also called a truma, but it has a much lesser halachic status, as we'll see. V'nemar b'seder im b'chuko, say v'chol ma'asar ha'aretz l'ashem hu, v'zeo anikra ma'aser rishon. So all the ma'aser goes to God, but God chooses to give it to the Levim who serve him in the Beis Hamikdash, and it's called ma'aser rishon, the first ma'aser, so as not to confuse it with ma'aser sheni, which is a totally different thing, which is the produce that you require to go eat in Yerushalayim, or if you don't want to schlep it all to Yerushalayim, redeem it. Mishor Shia Mitzvah, why do we have to give Ma'aser Rishon? Lefisha Shevet HaLevi Bachar Hashem Besoch Echav Lavodoso Tamid B'Mikdosho. That God chose the tribe of Levi to worship him in the Beis HaMikdash. Alkein Haya Mechasto Aleim Laseis LaMichyosam Derech Kavod. He wants to give their sustenance in an honorable manner. So they shouldn't have to go beg for tzedakah because they have no form of business of jobs that they can do.
There's no land, though. This obviously, all this is based upon the idea that you're living in an agricultural, purely agricultural society.
Correct, right. So the Levi, in theory, nowadays, if the Levi could invest in the stock market.
Yeah.
So, okay, so then maybe he's totally rich. Okay, that's what he does in his spare time, right? But if it's in an agricultural society, yeah, so they had no land. They had no independent parnosa, so they had to rely on others. So instead of, again, of having to run around begging for food, God built it into the Torah that without even being asked, we have to go to the Levi and say, here, take. They don't even have to get to the point where they have to request it.
Kain Yeus Lemishar Se Hamelech Shatia Ruchosa Mizumenes Lehem Al Yede Achirim Shechinu Alem Veloit Starchu Hem Liagea Bedavar Zulosi Bavodas Hamelech Haikara.
So the people who are serving the king should not have to struggle to make a living, in essence. Rather, people should give it to them because they're doing such an important task that would be beneath their dignity to try to run around to make money to get food from other places. V'afalpi shehema yushneima sar shvatim. V'alfi chaluka shava hayaroi sheyitlu chelek echad mishneima sar. So he said, wait a minute. The Levim are one tribe, right? How many tribes are there? Not including Ephraim and Manasseh. So what the... How many shvatim should there be? Are there 12 shvatim? So they should get 1/12. Of the produce of the Jewish people. But instead, how much do they get? 1/10. They get more than seemingly is their fair share. So how do you justify that? Gamze hayisroim lahem lichvodam. This is to give them more honor. Bikimiyosam yibeis hamelech roi shetia chelkam yaseir al kulam. So they should have the biggest portion. Not only should it be free and offered to them on a silver platter, but it should be a bigger portion relatively than any of the other Jews get. V'yisron gadol shiyavu lehem chelek v'asiri noki mikol atzos hakarka. That they, without even having to put any effort to work the land, they get 1/10 of the produce.
But how does it actually work? Let's say I have land and I want to give the tenth to Levium. Where do I find the Levium and which ones do I give them to?
You can give to whomever you want.
I understand, but it would seem that some might get a whole lot more because they're in an area where people are observant. And in other places, they might not get any at all if people are not...
Yeah, that's a problem of this. Yeah,
so
you're right.
You assume. There's no central fund for Levium.
Like in school, when the kids are having lunch. So the... when the kids want to share their snacks. So instead of sharing just on their snacks, so they used to give the ma'aser to the Levium. Mm-hmm. Right? They used to have a plate of lettuce. And you have 10 pieces of lettuce. So, my parents told me I had to take out the ma'aser. Here's one piece of lettuce. So you're going to give the lettuce to, you're going to go to the table with the popular kids, and you're going to give him the, you're going to give the popular kids the lettuce. So yeah, to a certain extent, you get to choose the which Levium. So if you have some Levium who are grumpy and mean, so the people are not going to get as much miser. Yeah, it's just how it is.
Where they live, if you know, if the lady happens to live somewhere way out in the Negev, where the agriculture is,
right.
You know,
right?
You have to actually bring it to them, or they have to come and pick it up.
You're supposed to bring it. You have to give it to them. That you want, but here the question is that this cheshbon is not exactly accurate if you think about it, because the 1/10, there are a lot of, as we're going to see in a few minutes, there are a lot of criteria that have to be fulfilled in order to give my serishon. So, for example. Leket shicha and peya. The poor gifts to the poor are exempt from all the tithes. So there you go. You have a lot of produce right there that's exempt. And you have certain ways, like for example, if you eat a fruit before it's fully ripe, or maybe midoraisa, before you bring it into your house even, if you're just eating it in the field, munching on your fruits, you're allowed to eat it without separating the chumas from maisris. So the tenth, the fruit that's actually chayiv in the maaser, at least the araisa is not. I mean, it's not 100% of the produce. So the tenth of the stuff that's chayiv in maaser is not. It might be less than 1/12 of the total produce of the Jewish people. So it's not so bashar that it's true. Yeah.
Something about how you have to actually bring it into your house to the front door. If you put it into the window or something,
right,
you get out of it.
V'achlu b'sharecha. So you bring it into the house through the front door, so that's chayav, at least daraisa. According to some sheet, this is chayav. Yeah, or if you officially gather them. Like if you have, like for example, you have a granary and you're threshing your grain or something, and it's all sitting in heaps on the floor because you just threshed it, and you know, maybe you're munching on the raw kernels, that's allowed. But once you gather it into piles, so that you officially have now collected this grain for the purpose of formal usage, then that would also be chayev. So there are ways that it's pater. But basically, if you just go out into the field, even if you own the tree, and you start munching on the fruits of the tree, so then that would not be chayiv in shumas u'maisris. So that's why this cheshbon is a little bit off, and maybe it's really less than 1/12 of the total produce.
How do you determine what is 1/10 or 1/12? How do you have everybody has a scale in their backyard?
You're the mathematician.
What?
You're the mathematician.
No, it's just.
What do you mean? You determine. You have 10.
What kind of hardware?
You have 10 apples, so you give one to the Levi.
What
do you mean?
10 bushels.
10 bushels.
But
not
all bushels are equal.
Bushel. So you
weigh. Bushel is a measure.
So as we'll see, it says that the more accurate you are, the better. If you're totally off, then the Trumas and Maestras doesn't work. But if you're within a certain reasonable range that humans could be expected to be medactic on, then it's okay. But Chazal said that the more accurate you are, the better. So the best is to use weight. If you use weight,
not
that's
the more you give, the better.
No, you can't give more. You have to give 1/10. You're not allowed to give more.
Not allowed to give.
I mean, you have to. You have to separate 1/10. If you want to give 50% of your produce to a Levi, that's fine. But you have to separate the 1/10. You cannot take half your produce and say and take half of it and say this is the maaser. That's no good. That doesn't work at all. That's why. That's one of the reasons, as your son, I'm sure, could tell you, that that people are concerned in Eretz Yisrael when you have, most of the time, so people don't have their own farms. So people are relying, so you have these huge produce distributors who are selling the produce to stores. And you have these huge distributors, and the Rabbanut comes to take Trumas u'Maisris from these huge storehouses, these huge amounts of, so you have to be, when you're dealing with such an enormous amount, so it's not so pusha. You're liable to make mistakes.
Destroy this food?
The mice are not. The mice are not. The truma you do, yeah. The truma you do, but the mice are the 1/10 you don't destroy. We'll explain why later. But the point is that you have potentially a problem when you have, again, because the quantities that are done nowadays are much greater. So a lot of people are concerned. That's why some people want to separate their own Trumas u'Maisris, unless they, and we talked before about the question of demai. You also have a problem that we have produce that's called tevel, that that's produce that was certainly, the Truma Sumaisers were not separated from the tevel. And we also have a later takana of Chazal, which is called demai, which is that you're not allowed to believe, you're not allowed to trust, basically, other people's kashrus regarding the Hafrashas Truma Sumaisers, unless they're part of an official club of people who have publicly accepted that they're going to observe the mitzvahs and Truma Sumaisers properly. Because at a certain point, the Chachamim checked it out, and they found that a lot of the people in Eretz Yisrael were not separating Truma Sumaisers properly, so therefore they made this decree. So the question is, so you have the most fundamentalist, shall we say, understanding of this takana, is the Briskers. The Briskerov held that since nowadays there's no formal club of people who are believed regarding Truma Sumaisra, so you're not allowed to trust anybody. So basically he held that because of this issue of demai, then you have to be mafresh Truma Sumaisra yourself, or someone from your household maybe, because they're included in you, but you have to be mafresh Truma Sumaisra yourself from all the produce that you eat. So that's the most extreme shita regarding this. Whereas the Chazon Ish had a slightly more pragmatic shita, which is that if you know, even if we don't have a formal club nowadays, if you know that someone else is very makpid on separating the Truma Sumaisres, then you're allowed to trust that person. But the Chazon Ish says you're not allowed to trust the Hashgacha because they're doing stuff on such a large scale. So if you buy commercial produce at the store, and you have to separate the Truma Sumaisres yourself. And others hold, the most commonly accepted opinion is that if you trust the Hashgacha for Kashrus, you could trust the Hashgacha for Truma Sumaisres as well.
Is it all possible that Truma should not be separated because there's no, you're just destroying this food?
No, there's no possibility. What do you mean?
That's what I mean. I mean, why?
I mean, it's not that much. It's only it's about 1%. That actually,
to today, because there's no Beis HaMikdash.
So no. It's Chayiv Derabanan at least. No, everybody. There's no way of getting out of it.
No way of getting out of it.
There's no way of getting out.
It's a waste.
Okay, but that's...
Could you give it to Kohanim, or would not?
You could, but they can't eat it because they have to be Tahar, and they have to be Tahar. So the Kohanim could do... if you give them, like, oil, they could use it to light the candle. They could use, you know, but it's not all, you know, lettuce. What are they going to do with lettuce if they can't eat it, you know?
Is there some minimum amount of produce that, you know, this example, like, say you have a tree that produces exactly 9 oranges every year.
No, you have to cut one.
You have to say, all right,
Yeah, there's no minimum amount.
So actually the logic is, unless it's, you know, Ada Heksher or something, you might as well take it yourself, right? I mean, down to you taking it, even if someone else has.
Right. I mean, there's no downside. So the wasting food, right? There's no.
That's a
you could always do it again. But even no. So people are concerned that even if you completely trust the heksher, the trusting of the heksher, Rav Yoshev said that technically speaking, api halacha, you're allowed to trust the good heksher. Because it's as if we, not that you're trusting another person directly, but there's a communal board appointed to do it. So therefore, it doesn't fall under the prohibition of demai.
Right.
But the problem is, so some people are concerned, not that technically, halachically, you're not allowed to trust them. You know, Briskers would tell you, you're 100% allowed to eat, you know, trust the Ada for Orla and for making sure that everything is Pas Yisrael and that there are no treif ingredients in your food, but you're not allowed to, because of technical halacha, you're not allowed to trust them at all for Hafrashas Truma Sumaisres. So some would tell you that the issue is not necessarily purely halachic, but practical, that even the Eda, you know, they're dealing with huge quantities, so it's likely sometimes that they're going to make mistakes just because of the nature of the business. Again, they probably do a better job than the other Aksharim, but... But some people are concerned just on a practical level. I remember one of my Rebbeim in the yeshiva used to separate his own Truma Sumaisres from fresh produce because he felt that in stores, you know, you have things coming and going all the time, lots of different types, and the mistakes are more likely to be made even with an excellent hashgacha. But he said, like, for packaged commercial food, like crackers and, you know, Beastly, stuff that comes from a factory, where everything is much more controlled, that the ingredients are here before they go to here to be processed. They felt that everything was much more controlled, so he didn't separate his own Shumos Umaisers from the from packaged products. Yeah.
Is it actually a sin to waste food?
Yeah, I mean Baal Tashchis.
You hear this all the time
No, it's true. I mean, Baal Tashchis is, you're not allowed to waste food unnecessarily, but if you have a reason for it, so then you're allowed to do it. Certainly if it's if there's a fulfillment of a mitzvah potentially, so there's no als Baal Tashchis, there's no prohibition in separating your own truma, so maestris, certainly. And even Baal Tashchis, again, that it doesn't mean that if you have a huge plate of food and you're going to be sick if you eat it, that you have to stuff yourself with every morsel. So it's better to throw it out. Wasting food can be done externally and it could be done internally. So it doesn't, if it's sitting on your plate and no one else is going to eat it anyways, it's not us to throw it out. But again, of course, there is a halachic imperative to try to avoid as much as possible unnecessary wasting of food.
It's a positive mitzvah, which positive is negative. If you have Baal Tashchis, which is negative, you have positive to separate Trumas and Maestros.
No, but you can fulfill both. Yeah. Again, if it's possible to fulfill both, you should. So the question is, nowadays, so we get into whether you have to give Maestro Risho nowadays. You have a couple different shitas. So Maestro Risho, you fundamentally should give to a Levi, because as well, the Sefer Chinuch is going to discuss, the Maaser Rishon has no Kedusha. In other words, the food is Tomei, the Levi's Tomei, totally allowed to eat it. If the Levi wants...
I'm not sure who is a Levi.
Oh, I'll get there in a second. So the Levi... if the Levi gets some Maaser and he makes a lovely salad from the Maaser, and then he says, I really have too much, I want to invite my neighbor, the Yisrael, over for dinner, I'm going to serve him the salad. That's 100% fine. There's no holiness to the food. There's no restrictions on who is allowed to eat the food. The only restriction, you only have to give it to the Levi. So Maaser Rishon, even nowadays, should be given to a Levi. However, some shitas hold, some poskim have said, that Lemaisa, you don't have to give the Maaser Rishon to a Levi nowadays. You have to separate it out. You have to say... You have to say this is Maaser Rishon. You could give the Maaser Rishon. You should separate out the Maaser Rishon and then eat it yourself. Why? You basically the Levi comes and says, "Hey, that's mine. Give me my Maaser Rishon." So you have a right to say, perhaps, "Well, prove you're a Levi. Prove you're a Levi, and then you get it. Otherwise, Mahamotzi Mechaber Alav Haraya. That if you want to take my food, so you have to bring in the times of Beis Hamikdash, where everyone was recognized as Levi, and they had documented Yichus, whatever. So then there was no proof necessary. Nowadays, that you have to give. So there are people who say you don't have to give my solution. But I think that." As long as you separate out the Maaser Rishon, at least, say, these 10 cases of wheat, whatever, if they have 100 cases of wheat, if these 10 are Maaser Rishon, that doesn't affect the kashrus of the food. As long as you separate it out, the food will be kosher. If you didn't even say this part is Maaser Rishon, then the food will not be kosher. It will be tevel. But I think most people, at least, I don't know about the, in the, when they're doing it commercially, then I don't know if the huge commercial companies actually give the Maaser to a Levi. But when people are have a tree in their backyard and they're separating out the Maaser Rishon, I think most poskim do recommend that Lamaisa you should be macher and you should give the Maaser Rishon actually to a Levi. Yeah.
So recommend only or make?
Look, because it doesn't affect the kashrus of the food, and the Arashita said you don't have to, but you really should. Yeah, if you're doing it privately,
you
should.
Have to.
So I understand probably then. You take a tenth, you set it aside or separate it, and say this is Maaser, and then you go ahead and eat it with the rest of it.
If you're not giving it to a Levi, that's the procedure, yeah. And that's the procedure for demai, like the questionably tithed produce. You don't know for sure that hasn't been tithed yet. So if you have demai or you have suffic tevel, if you have a genuine doubt as to whether there was trumas and maaser separated, then you for sure don't have to give it to a Levi, because the Levi comes and says, "Hey, I want my maaser." You say, "Well, bring me proof that this wasn't tithed already," and then you can have your maaser. So so for demai lechatchila, you're allowed to say, you don't even have to physically separate it. You could say, even the Mishnah is talking about drinking a cup of wine. If you're going to have a little drinking party with an Amaretz, in the times of the Gemara was not an ignoramus like it's used nowadays, but rather someone who didn't fulfill all the halachas properly. So you can't trust him regarding the Truma Sumaisris. So, well, except Truma Gedola, but not Gedola, whatever. So the so you say, if he gives you a cup of wine, so you say, Maiser Rishon is at the top, and Maiser Sheni is at the bottom of the cup, basically. I mean, actually, it would be the opposite, because you have to leave over a tenth of the Maiser Rishon because of Trumas Maiser, which we'll discuss in the next mitzvah. But you basically say Maiser Sheni is at the bottom and a tenth of what's left over at the end. What I leave over at the end, you leave over a hundredth of the cup. Say what I leave over at the end is Trumas Maiser. That and another 9/10 of the cup on the bottom are Maiser Rishon. The stuff I leave over at the end is going to be Trumas Maiser. And Maiser Sheni is at the top of the cup, and I redeem the Maiser Sheni on the coins. So you don't even have to physically separate it at all. As long as you say Maiser Rishon is on the bottom, okay, then that's good enough.
So, okay, so here you have, like, say, you have a pile of, I don't know, wheat or something like that. You actually have to separate out 1/10 and move it aside? It sounds like
no.
You basically have to say...
If you have to give it to the Levi, then you have to separate it, yeah. Otherwise, no, you don't have to separate it at all. You just say... Maiser Rishon is on the north end of the produce, and automatically a tenth of the produce will be separated, will be called Maiser Rishon.
And then
yeah.
You eat it anyway.
And you eat it anyway if you're not giving it to Levi. Because again, there's no holiness involved in the produce. It's only a monetary obligation that you have to give to the Levi.
And I once heard that food for exports, oranges and dates and whatever from Israel, does not take Maiser. Produce that's for export
from Israel.
So it could be. I'm not sure what the exact mitzvah is. If you see a package of produce from Israel and it has a hechsher on it, then I certainly hope that they took out the Truma Sumaisers. But the question is, if you go to Costco and they have Israeli oranges. So even though the Rabbanut, again, if there's some sort of controlled system, Tenuva, whatever, even if it's not the most machmir or whatever, but they hopefully try taking Trumas and Maisers from whatever they can of all the produce in Eretz Yisrael. But the ones that are for export, so A, because they may be eaten by Goyim, and so the Rabbanut maybe does not separate Trumas, so you have to investigate the Metzias, maybe it changed for the better, but you also have... that there's a shita that fruit that is exported is not chayev in Trumas Umaisrus at all. So we paskin, the consensus of the Achronim is that if the produce became obligated in Trumas Umaisrus when it was in Eretz Yisrael, so it can't be undone once you sent out the chutzar. It's the maisa we paskin that you have to make sure... What do you mean? Un-miser something? You need Hataras Nadarim. You can un-miser something with Hataras Nadarim, but we're not talking about un-misering something. We're talking about unobligating it for Trumas Umaiser. So since there is that cheetah, so maybe the Rabbanu relied on that as well. Well, the Maiser, if you see Israeli produce without Hechsher, so you have to separate Trumas Umaiser, which is not that difficult, but the bigger problem with the fruits is Orla. The tithes are a halbatzara, so to speak. That's not such a big deal. That you can fix yourself, but the orla is unfixable. Mm-hmm. There's no getting out of that. So that's why you have to be very careful that especially fruits from Eretz Yisrael, they have to have a good hechsher to ensure that they were not orla.
How do you know it's from Eretz Yisrael? You see oranges.
Sometimes you see in the case, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes there's a sticker
or something. Yeah.
Right. Sometimes you see a sticker or something. Produce. Again, if you're going to a store, you don't have to be choshesh just out of nowhere that, you know, the vast majority of produce is not from Israel. But if you see that the produce is from Israel, then you have to separate Trumas Umaisrus. So, but technically, if you separate your own Trumas Umaisrus, you could go to any store in Israel except for Shemitah issues. In a time where there's no Shemitah issues, then you could buy vegetables anywhere under any hechsher with no hechsher and separate the Trumas Umaisrus yourself. The fruit would be an issue.
Yeah.
But the problem is, if you buy a falafel, what's he going to do? There is salad in it.
Why not?
Well, I mean, this was the trumos, separate.
You buy the falafel. How you count the number of falafel balls? You have five falafel balls, so you take off whatever 1% of the falafel.
It becomes very messy business, believe me.
You gotta do what you gotta do. Then you look inside, you find well, the set of salad has lettuce and tomato and cucumber, so you have to find how much lettuce is there.
Shredded
carrots. You have to take off 1%, a little over 1% of each type of food.
The bugs
you can't mice their way. But you have to. It's a problem if you go to someone's house and you basically trust their kashas, but you don't trust the trumas and maestros. Then you would take your, you know, on your. Right, that's what the Mishnah is talking about with the demai. If you eat by an amaret, so then you take a little bit of each stuff thing on your plate. You take 1%, you push it to the side. Oh, I'm so full, I couldn't possibly eat another bite.
But then and you separate.
Oh, then you have to maestro the dessert. You have to maestro. You have to be careful. I once brought a cake to one. I was eating at Shabbos meal at a house of one of the rabbanim of my yeshiva. So he brought him a cake. And there were two layers of the cake. That there was a cake layer and a mousse layer. I don't know why you have to meister mousse, because I don't know what ingredients would be, but whatever it is. So he said he was more of a brisker than his wife. She was more relaxed. So they brought out the cake and had a little hole missing. Because she meistered it. So then he says, he's eating the cake. He's like, there are two layers here. You didn't take from the bottom layer. There's different things. So they had to... re-meister. had to take now another little piece from the.
You can meister on Shabbos, obviously.
Not really. You're not allowed to separate trumas and meisters on Shabbos, but there are ways to do it. That. Either way, if for Vadai, for stuff that did not have the Trumas and Maaser separated, then it depends if you own the produce or not. You're allowed to say, okay, whatever. So let's take a step back. Before Shabbos, you can say, what I'm going to take a set aside is going to be, and then another nine portions is Maaser, then this is Trumas, then this is going to be Trumas Maaser. So you verbally declare your intention to perform the Trumas Maaseris. So that works for Vadai if you own it already, or it works for Demai even if you don't own it. So as long as you make this declaration before Shabbos, which every brisker in Eretz Yisrael does, just in case they forget something, that they make the declaration before Shabbos that they're going to Meiser, so then that would not be a problem. You'd be allowed to Meiser on Shabbos. So, yeah, this wasn't Eid Charedis cake, so it wasn't... It was not worse than Demai, so the verbal declaration would have worked. The Chazon Ish had a... Had an interesting chiddush, which is that if the item has a good hechsher, then you're allowed to meiser on Shabbos even without this tanai, even with the verbal declaration in advance. Because he said, because it's not really the whole reason you're not allowed to separate on Shumas meiser on Shabbos is an issur d'rabbanan, because it looks like you're fixing it. It's like makke b'patish. That one of the malachis on Shabbos is that putting the finishing hammer blow on something is not allowed. So too, when you separate trumas and maaseris, it's like you're putting the finishing touches on the food, and now you're allowed to eat it. So you're not allowed to maaser on Shabbos. So he said that only applies when there's a real tikkun. That when you're doing something just because it's like sort of a chumrah, even if I really think you almost have to do this chumrah. Even so, if it has a good hechsher, so then you're allowed to maaser on Shabbos even without it. There's a famous case where they forgot to meiser the challah or the wine or something in the Chazon Ish's house, and he allowed it to be done on Shabbos even without a tnai, because really he didn't have an actual concern that the trumas and maaseris were not separated.
Isn't it true, though, that until the majority of Jews live in Israel as opposed to... until then, some of the laws don't apply?
The Raisa. Oh. They're still there. They still have the Rabbanan. That's it's very similar, by the way. There's a halacha. So whether you're allowed to tovel kalim on Shabbos, so that's the it says that you're not allowed to tovel kalim on Shabbos in the Gemara, but the question is, it's a machlokas rishonim as to whether that applies only to vessels that were tamei, that you're not allowed to make them tahor, or if it even applies to the tvila of new vessels that we do nowadays. So we normally assume that it applies even to the tefillah of new vessels that we do nowadays, and you're not allowed to tovel something on Shabbos or Yontif. So if it's only a chumrah that you're toveling something, then you are allowed to do it on Shabbos, because it's not considered a real tikkun, because really you are allowed to use it anyway. That's why, for example, some people are machmer to tovel plastic. You look in the KJ mikvah, if you look in the KJ Kalim mikvah, it says on the sign that you have to tovel plastic without a bracha. So plastic, so plastic is a shaila, because the Gemara says that the reason that you have to tovel glass is because that it can be melted down and reformed just like metal. So it's that. So since the main chiyuv of tefillas kalim is regarding metal, and glass is analogous to metal, so therefore you have to tovel glass. So the question is, so plastic is a new material. So plastic did not exist in the times of the Gemara.
There are two varieties of plastic. They have a plastic which, in fact, is not cross-linked, which can melt down and reform again. Like, I suppose, just linear polyethylene, then that'd be true. But the vast majority of plastic that you have, you can't, you know, melt it down. In other words, it'll just...
It's finished.
Yeah, it'll finish. It can't be reformed into something else once you heat it up. You know, so it's
Okay.
In fact, the if you have a glass, you know, like measuring cup or something like that, it's basically one big molecule. It's all cross-linked inside, you know. So heating it up is just going to destroy it. You'll be able to use it again.
I don't know. I would assume that once you're talking about the type of material, so then it doesn't matter if this particular object, this exact particular type, could be melted down or not. So plastic anyway, so the question is, so plastic, it's a shiloh whether glass is deraisa or derabanan. This whole shiloh, whether tefillas kalim in general is deraisa or derabanan. But if, assuming tefillas kalim is deraisa, so there is a machlokas rishonim as to whether glass is included in the deraisa or was a separate gzera derabanan. So we normally assume that glass is derabanan. So if that's the case, then that means the chachamim, you know, got up and said, well, glass is like metal, so therefore we're going to make an enactment that you have to tovel glass. So if that's the case, so plastic, so if anything, that would be the Rabbanan. So then, if glass is the Rabbanan, so then Chazal never got up and made an enactment that said, no, you have to tovel glass. To plastic.
Plastic.
So therefore, you don't have to tovel plastic. But if glass is the Raisa, then maybe, when the Gemara says that when you melt it down, because you can melt it down and reform it so it's like metal, so that's saying it in deraisa, that anything that can be melted down and reformed is deraisa, included in the chiyuv of tefillas kalim deraisa. So maybe you can make an argument, as does the mincha, I don't know if this is exact reasoning, but he says, since plastic is similar to glass to the extent that it's meltable and reformable, so you have to tovel plastic. So that's not the generally accepted opinion.
What about disposable?
Disposable, some say even metal would not be obligated. So that's why I think everybody is makel about...
What metal's disposable?
Like aluminum pans. Aluminum is its own shaila, because aluminum isn't one of the five metals discussed in the Chumash. Okay, but setting aside aluminum, disposable plastic, I would... Again, it could be there some people... whatever, who are machmer and everything. I would assume that even most of those who are machmer and plastic would not be machmer on disposable plastic, because you have that other reason that not only is plastic a shayla, but disposable is also a shayla, so therefore I would assume that they wouldn't do that. But a real serious plastic utensil,
Like Tupperware.
So Breuer's...
That lives forever, Tupperware.
Right, so Breuer's would... And the Minchas, based on the Minchas Yitzchak, because Minchas Yitzchak was the Rebbe of Rabbi Posen. So Rabbi Posen follows most of the things of Minchas Yitzchak, so therefore he paskin that you have to tovel plastic.
So I can see toveling.
Right, of course, right.
So you have like a jar of, say, mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Okay, you open it up.
Yeah.
Now you're using it to store the remainder of the mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you really dump all the mayonnaise out and put it into a toybold kale?
Well, since it's already in there and you bought it together, so I don't think there's anyone who's machmir that you have to dump all the mayonnaise out right away. But there are people who are machmir that once the mayonnaise is finished and you want to reuse it, then you have to
totally. It's hard enough to find glass jars anyway. Everything's in damn plastic. So I say glass mayonnaise. Well, I don't use mayonnaise.
No,
glass jars. With plastic lids, I reuse them endlessly because they're very useful. Stuff keeps better in glass than in plastic.
Okay. So
I suppose you could.
Well, if I have a house one day, I want a mikvah in my house.
Yes.
It'll be very easy.
Amen.
Very easy. Yes. Okay, so. So that's the shayla of aluminum. So if aluminum might be a shayla, and disposable is also a shayla, so therefore, so lemaisa, one could be makel on aluminum pans. Aluminum isn't one of the, again, aluminum is certainly metal-like, so some people hold it would be deraisa even enough listed explicitly. So the different shittas. One says, some people say you always have to toivel disposable aluminum pans. Some say if you plan to only use them once, then you don't have to tovel it. And some say if you you don't have to tovel it at all, even if you plan on reusing it many times, because betzim it's a disposable object. The mice, I think one could be makel on the disposable aluminum pans.
Don't I remember that Yitzi Dykman, because this came up since we reuse all his aluminum pans, that he toivels it all before he gives it to you.
That's great. Okay, that saves us some effort if you want to be machmir like that Chita.
We worried about it at one point because we use his pans.
Ever until they fall apart. Absolutely, and they don't fall apart.
So if one is machmir to tovel plastic, which obviously you don't have to do, but okay, but if you wish to do that, then you are allowed to do it on Shabbos or Yontif, assuming again Shabbos, Erev Ishus, whatever aside. You'd be allowed to do it on Shabbos and Yontif because that is only a chumrah and it's not actually fixing the object on a fully halachic level.
Didn't you have a Sephardim hold that you can travel on Shabbos?
He says, yeah, because they hold that it only applies to Kalin Tmeim. That it doesn't apply to the immersion of new vessels, and you'd be allowed to do that on Shabbos. So, yeah, I think that happened once, that a Sephardi went to Tovol an object on Shabbos in the Breuer's Kehle Mikvah. And you can imagine that they were somewhat displeased about this. So you shouldn't do that, even if you're Sephardi and you're allowed to, you follow the opinion that you're allowed to Tovol Kehlem on Shabbos and Yontif. It looks strange in a mostly Ashkenazi community. So lemaisa, again, if it's a really an emergency, so maybe. But under normal circumstances, one should not Tovol Kehlem on Shabbos and Yontif. There are other heterim that if you want to tovel a cup or something, so then if you don't immerse it explicitly, but rather you make it look like you want a drink of water, so you take your cup and I want a really big scoop, so you put the cup all the way under the water like you're supposed to. You take a nice fresh cup of mikvah water.
You have to drink the mikvah water?
No. You don't have to actually drink it.
All right. Okay, good.
Why would you do that?
Because it doesn't look like you're toveling, like you're fixing the... Because the whole gzeira is because you might be fixing.
But you're not allowed to use the cup without it being toveled. So how could you possibly do that?
Well, that's
what do you mean? No, now you're toveling it at the same time.
Huh?
You're toveling it and filling it up at the same time. Vivasacha. So that is one way to do it. There are ways to do it, but under normal circumstances, it's banned, especially because mikvahs nowadays are very public. You know, someone's going to watch you schlepping a kli and the walk going into the Kalim mikvah on Bennett Avenue. It's not like it's in a secluded private place, or you're going into the woods and toveling it in a spring or something.
Doesn't Dumbra also have a Kalim mikvah?
They have a men's mikvah. The men's mikvah should not be used for toveling Kalim because it's not built to all the stringencies that a proper mikvah is really supposed to be built to.
What, you mean as a men's mikvah?
Yeah, because men's mikvahs, you don't have to be so machmir because there's
got it.
Yeah. Again, for fundamentally, Kalim mikvah has to be to the same standard as a woman's mikvah, but Lemaisa, where we build women's mikvahs with more chumras than we would build a kehilah mikvah, because when you're talking about a mikvah for a woman, so you're dealing with an isser karis, and the tefillas kehilim is not an isser karis, so we build mikvahs that are kosher maker adin for kehilim, and for women we try as much as possible to incorporate as many chumras and satisfy as many shittas as possible. Okay. That if you do this properly and you give the proper maestros to the people who are serving God, then God is going to bless you. Giving the tithes are a fence around wealth. So you're gonna, your material possessions are gonna be blessed if you give the give the maizos properly. Oh, you, somebody just reminded me about drinking the mikveh water. That in my for Kala classes, my wife had a very, I didn't like the book at all, but she had a very fluffy book. You know, with didn't just teach the halachas, but there are all these nice, you know, Maisalach and stories about keeping Ilchos Nida, whatever. It wasn't exactly our speed, but whatever. That's what they used in the class. So they were telling a lot of stories. I think this book was published in the 80s when you had a lot of Jews leaving the Soviet Union, and so a lot of the stories were about the Mesiras Nefesh that women had in the under the Soviet rule. Fulfilling the immersion in the mikveh. So it said that one family secretly built a mikveh, which was not allowed, in the basement of their apartment building. God. And they used to hide it and keep it locked. And finally, so they used to change the water once a year because they couldn't risk, there was a whole ASIC to change the water. So they used to change it once a year. So the one year, the person who was in charge of changing the water, you know, was changing the water, and one of the neighbors walked in on him. What are you doing? So the book says that the fellow responded, "Oh, you know, the water supply here is really not so great. It's kind of spotty. We don't have good service. So, you know, I built my own cistern in the basement of the building to make sure I always had water." And you know, I'm just going now to get a drink of water. And he took a cup. This was the once a year they had. It was just about to change the water after a year of use. Uh-huh. They said, "Here, would you like a drink of my special water supply?" I don't know if he made the bracha. The guy was watching. Whatever. So he took a nice swig of this water in order to show the guy that that he was just changing drinking water. Oh, it's Baruch Hashem, we're not in that situation nowadays. We actually have to drink the water of the mikvah. But there were times when apparently it was necessary.
You have to put a hole in the ice in order, you know, in the winter or something.
And in that mikveh? No, but there were stories of, there certainly were stories that when there was no clandestine basement mikveh available, that the women used to go to the to a lake in the middle of the winter. They used to chop a hole in the ice and go in, yeah. Normally you're not allowed to say, we'll see. If I'm going to try for a week, I'm going to do all the mitzvahs, and if God blesses me, then I'll continue. And if God doesn't bless me, then, you know, we'll talk about reducing my commitment to the mitzvahs. So normally you're not allowed to do that. You don't keep Shabbos, or a month you decide to keep Shabbos, and then you buy a lottery ticket at the end of that, and you say, "Well, of course I'm going to win now." So that you're not allowed to do. But okay, what's it? Them are los sinasu es Hashem elgeichem. You're not allowed to test God. Zulasi b'mitzvah zo with this mitzvah shemuter lenasos im yivarchei akel basosos of yozari zaleah. You're allowed to test God. That if you say I'm giving the truma semaisis properly, I expect a reward. Talking about this is the Haftarah for Shabbos HaGadol. That God allows us, is saying, here, you can test me with this. Again, it doesn't mean that if God, you know, you don't find that you have the blessing, you're allowed to stop doing it. But you're allowed to at least think and analyze your life from the perspective of, well, I should be receiving the reward if
what
I do this properly.
What is a blessing? What is a reward?